I'll never forget the first moment when I walked in Cure Cinema. I was hooked from there on.
Hello and welcome to the 48th Skin On podcast. So, yeah, we're racking them up now.
Yeah, I'm not really funny to say that. That's hey, you got it right.
You have 2 weeks before we have the half century.
Yeah. We should celebrate now.
And in true Donald Clark style, 50 years, 50 films and 50 for our 50th show.
You're asking a lot there.
Yeah, we don't know about that.
Five.
We can definitely do five.
So, gentlemen, what have you been watching?
Yeah, okay. I've seen a few. One I talked to Philip briefly about earlier, Broken.
Oh, okay.
The Rufus, what's his face?
Norris.
Norris, so. Which is interesting. I heard good things about it, and I think the first kind of half hour or so is actually pretty good, but then it kind of collapses in itself and becomes kind of awful. As great actors, Tim Roth.
Kenny Murphy.
Yeah, all the great work.
And that Eloise Lawrence
is fantastic. Absolutely fantastic in it.
Marvellous.
But I just, the whole thing just derailed completely. And felt padded out actually in 90 minutes, which I kind of, at the end, is very problematic.
The ending's dreadful.
Yeah, it's a really pulse off film though. So yeah, I wasn't a massive fan of that. I rewatched The Wind Rises because herself hadn't seen it before, so we watched. She didn't particularly like it, actually, which is surprising. But there you go. I know it's pretty goddamn good.
Yeah.
And it's a finest swan song that you could really hope for.
Hello, Hayao Miyazaki.
Yeah.
In case you're listening.
Yeah.
Konnichiwa, Miyazaki-san.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So that's good. That was really good.
Interesting.
A few other Ghibli recordings on the Film 4 season to watch.
Mm.
And then I topped that off with I Used to Live Here. It's a Frank Berry film. Which is marvellous, and I think it's finishing on Thursday, but if you
that's
get a chance,
it's still
really, really, really good.
Yeah. It's still showing the light screen and a couple of other venues. So.
Yeah.
Good.
And it's a textbook example of what you can do with a low budget, and how, and I'm calling to, you know, certain films in the film festival that are shown that couldn't spend money, don't know how to spend money, to small events, and this looked like it was made for very little. But it's just so well done. It looks great, brilliantly acted by essentially non-professional cast, and a very, very haunting story. Really, really well told story. Highly recommend.
Very good.
So that's that is me.
Mm. Me?
Yes.
Me.
Yes.
Yay. I only watched one thing of note. I kept a promise I made last week. I watched Blade Runner: The Final Cut.
Very nice.
Yes.
Now, sad to say, I did not see it on the big screen, but I did crack open that ridiculous 5-disc box set that I have. That thing is 5 cuts of the film.
Yeah.
I didn't realise there were even that many cuts.
Oh, there's
probably
more.
At least one.
There's more to come.
Oh, no doubt. But I mean, it has two theatrical versions, director's got a work print, and the final cut. God damn it, it is good. It's so... From what I recalled of the original theatrical cut that I saw, I'm not even sure which version it was, but...
Had it got a voiceover?
Yes.
It did!
It was
the theatrical cut.
Yeah.
There are two theatrical cuts.
Yeah, but that's the original theatrical
cut.
Yeah, okay. Anyway, the point is, it's been a long time since I've seen it in any cut, and it's bloody wonderful. It is up there with Scott's best. Maybe not quite as high as Alien, but it's close.
It's not. It's top three Scott.
Yeah,
here.
Top
easy.
Yeah, but when I was thinking back on it, thinking back on Scott's CV, he has one masterpiece. He has some really, really good films. Maybe 5, 6 at a stretch, and after that,
the quality dips dramatically.
Yes, it does. I mean, you can always bring the visuals, but Ridley, really, he's not going to be talking at this stage in his career, but scripts, get picky.
Also, the problem is, I think, is that of the two greatest films he's made, which would be Alien and...
G.I. Jane.
And Blade Runner, is that he's tarnishing that legacy with Prometheus, and then we'll have, whether it looks like Blade Runner 2, which...
Blade Runner.
Yeah, I... There's a chance it'll be good. We all suspect it won't.
Harrison Ford revisiting old material, it doesn't...
No, I mean, the whole thing stinks.
And I kept holding out so much hope while watching Prometheus. I just kept saying to myself, but it's so pretty, but it's so pretty. And
it's
then,
pretty
and then Charlie Theron just went, Father. And I thought, nope, I'm out. This is nonsense.
Yeah,
this
running,
nonsense.
Running in straight lines away from circular objects.
Yeah. Also, on the internet revisionist list, is that... keeps turned up as people loving it.
Yeah,
and
there are a lot.
It's misunderstood.
Except it's
it
not,
is not.
It's not revisionist, though. A lot of people seem to like it from the get-go. There's a
friend. I think there's a lot of...
I really do.
Yeah.
A friend of mine actually thinks it's better than Aliens. I don't know what to say to that. I really don't.
Tell them to go rewatch Aliens.
Yeah, I've tried.
Aliens as in Aliens?
Yes.
As in follow-up.
Yeah,
Cameron.
As in Cameron.
Yeah.
No argument from there.
That Prometheus is better than Aliens.
It's not. I'm no fan of Aliens,
yeah,
but it's not.
Jesus.
God damn.
What is wrong with people? Anyway.
Well, I'm asking the same thing about you, so, you know, fair enough.
Yeah.
For our 50th show, it's going to be Jane and I in the bust up we've been threatening for ages.
Basically, Statler and Waldorf showdown.
No! Oh, good luck.
So, yeah, that was me.
Well, mainly I've been watching
Guardians of the Galaxy.
I didn't watch.
No,
Guardians
wow.
I think we're going to have to. Let
I did
that
not. Go. I did watch Tower of the Dark World though.
There you go. You see, I wasn't a million miles away.
I'm re-prepping myself for Avengers.
I still haven't seen Thor 2.
It's not great.
Well, it's not as good as Thor 1.
It's okay.
Really,
Thor is.
I liked
better.
Thor 1. So
yeah,
I would
like
say I loved it, but
Thor 2 is a fine addition to the episodic nature that
Marvel
it's okay.
It's fine. It's
yes.
It moves the plot along, which is what
it does do a lot more.
It has a kind of fun scenes, but it's very dark.
Is Stellan Skarsgård back?
Yes.
Is Tom Hiddleston back?
Yes.
Then I'm going to watch it.
Tom Hiddleston has a very good scene in it. As
he has one scene?
Well, he has a few scenes, but he's one particularly good one where he's walking down a corridor and he's pretending to be other people, so he turns Thor into Sif and then he turns himself into Captain America and he does this speech.
They're all crossing over into each other's films. Guffaw, guffaw.
I know, it's quite cleverly
done. It's alright, I like that.
But yeah, it has a completely pointless villain, Christopher Eccleston. Wasted as per usual.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What does it take for something? I haven't seen anybody use Christopher Eccleston effectively since Danny Boyle.
Yeah. It's.
Yeah. Do you remember the Jimmy McGovern film Heart?
No.
That is a superlative Christopher Eccleston.
I think I've heard
it's great.
Stuff.
It's really, really good, really strong. But yeah, I agree with you in terms of it's been a long time since I've used. It's very good in The Leftovers, the TV show, but again, TV works a lot better.
Doctor Who,
Yeah, exactly.
Why didn't they keep him on as Doctor Who?
He wanted to leave.
Oh, fair enough. Maybe because he got.
He was very good. He was good.
Mm.
Yeah. So the Thor Dark World was my main rewatch. Then I saw Fast and Furious 7 and John Wick, but we'll talk about them later. Yeah. So we move on to the news.
What's new?
What is new indeed? So,
yeah.
Four Irish animations have been nominated for the Pulciella Award. So this is in Venice. It's Cartoons on the Bay festival takes place in Venice, and it's four Irish animations are up. There's three TV shows: The Day Henry Met, and that's variously The Day Henry Met Whoever. Every day Henry meets somebody else.
Stalin.
All
the kids' characters.
It's a preschool.
John Dillinger Jr.
It's a preschool animation series.
So we could come up with the whole
we could have a podcast episode
all over again. The Day Henry Met Brutus.
Anyway, sorry.
Yeah, so it's Wiggly Woo and
it's what?
Wiggly Woo are the animations.
Wiggly Woo out of this.
Then they're competing against Bing from Brown Bag Films in the same category for TV series for preschool. So.
Ned Ryerson!
Yeah, no, not Groundhog Day's Bing, no. And or Chandler from Friends. Then there is a lovely animation that's up in the. What is it?
Come on, Miles.
Yeah, educational and social issues work category. So basically, this is called Punky. It's from Monster Animation and Design, and it's a story of Jungro with Down syndrome. And so,
okay.
Wow. That's something you don't hear about.
It won Best Children's Film Award at the International Disability Film Festival last November. So it's
good.
And then Cartoon Saloon, Somewhere Down the Line, the short film that won in Clermont-Ferrand, is up for Best Short Film. So,
cool. I'm envisioning a lot of Irish animators getting drunk in Venice whenever it is on.
April 16th.
Won't have to back.
April 16th to 18th, so yeah. Maybe avoid Venice during that period. So while we're on the talk of Somewhere Down the Line and Irish Shorts, the IFI is having a night of Irish Short Animation. So that's coming up on the 28th of April.
Cool.
And Somewhere Down the Line is playing there. Two other Cartoon Saloon ones are showing as well. Louise Bagnall's Loose Ends and...
No relation.
The talented one in the family, eh?
And her other short donkey, so there's two of them are showing. Then we have Own Kidneys, We the Masses, Alan Holly's Coda, and Alan Holly and Adrian Merica's Old Fangs, Bomb by David O'Reilly, On Departure by Owen Duffy, Ashling Lindsay's Seed, and Eamon O'Neill's Left, and so and David O'Reilly's Mirror. So there's loads of shorts being shown, all animated. And all on the 28th of April in the IFI. Some of them is very good. And a lot of them, or at least the trailers for a lot of them, are on Gartscreen. And I will have a full rundown of them all by the time, yeah, by the time this airs. So.
Excellent. Excellent work done.
While we're still in the rounds of short film, the Irish Film Board received 96 applications for its After 16 scheme.
Aha. Uh-huh.
So yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, so that closed there last week.
So that's a bit of money around for this.
Yeah, so they're going to finance up to 8 of them.
Ooh.
So it's going to be interesting to see what comes out, because the remit included stories that were fact or fiction, that could be present day or historical.
Yeah.
So it's about 1916 and the impact of 1916. So they're saying that the Film Board is reporting that the topic of women is a particular area of interest in... amongst the filmmakers, the role of women in 1916, which is quite important because the first parliament, the first Dáil, had a female minister. You know, so we were quite progressive back then. We're much less progressive now. But, yeah.
But the first female MP in Westminster was one of the leaders of it. I mean, can't deny it. They had a role. But beyond Countess Markovitz, who do you hear about?
That's it, exactly. So this is a chance for more to be heard, and then hopefully some of the films that are chosen will tell that story.
Well, let's see what's picked.
So the Writers Guild, they have their annual Zebby Awards coming up. So this year is the 8th one. So this is where they reward writing in television and radio, theatre, film, and gaming. So the ones that are of more interest to us, feature films: John Michael McDonagh for Calvary, Terry McMahon for Patrick's Day,
yeah,
and Ron Blaney for Boogaloo. No, that can't be right. No, Brendan Heery and Niall Heery for Gold.
Yeah.
So that's,
yeah,
that's the feature film.
Yeah, we all know, but we don't want to win.
It's
the worst part of Calvary is its script. So
true.
Yeah,
true.
Well, it's
you know.
I do know. I was there.
How is it eligible if it's not an Irish film? Right?
Yeah, we were actually
not again.
So the short films has Ron Blaney for Boogaloo and Graham, James Fitzgerald for Spunky Dog, and John Kennedy and Rory O'Brien for Cutting Grass. So, but then Best Television has Colin Bateman for Scoop Series 2 Episode 1, Oliver Callan and James Cotter for Callan Kicks the Year, Stuart Carlin for Love Hate Series 5 Episode 4.
My favourite.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, well, sure, I've seen it. Don't
look at me. So I've heard.
So they are on May 20th in the Sugar Club, and Senator David Norris is hosting.
That should be fun.
Yeah.
Senator David Norris is hosting. We've reduced him to our Stephen Fry, haven't we?
National Treasure, etc.
Yeah, but I'd give more credibility to David Norris than that.
But he was actually, you know, an active politician.
Yeah,
it's probably why.
Yeah.
So the last bit of news, a feature that's been doing the rounds for a while over here, but in terms of the sort of independent Irish film scene. Darkness on the Edge of Town has now landed a US distribution deal. So,
good.
Yep. Candy Factory Films have picked it up and they are going to do a day and date theatrical and VOD release.
It's seen a lot more of that these days.
Yeah. Does that for these pretty smaller
films? Yeah, it makes sense.
It works very well. So this played at the, premiered at the Film Flat last year, and then it played at Underground here in Dublin last year as well.
Has it got a release generally here yet?
No, it didn't. It didn't have a cinematic release. But
I'm sensing a trend here.
It did play at Slamdance recently, so.
It's an interesting. Yeah, I kind of would have. I haven't seen it, but it did sound intriguing when I read about it. It's something I may well have gone to
it's
see.
It's a very atmospheric film.
You've seen it on?
Yes, I did. I saw it last year. I recommend checking it out.
Okay. Excellent.
It has a great turn by Emma Eliza Regan.
Okay.
So, that's the news. And so, one of the things that it won't feature in the top 10, but I want to highlight is how I used to live here. In the box office. So because it didn't make top 10, it made €4,450.
Many screens?
That is of 6 screens.
Hmm.
It's okay, is it? Like, I mean, as a micro release,
it's not bad.
Considering, like you said, Jay, it didn't cost that much.
I'd say it cost practically nothing.
Well, then it might have got a good chunk of its
money. Yeah, also, and.
Well, Altman made £1,045.
Well, it's a far better film than Altman. Yeah. I'll tell you how much.
There you go.
So, yeah, good hustle. Well done, Frank Perry.
And Robot Overlords.
I remember reading about this. It looks dreadful.
It's out 2 weeks in the UK and Ireland, and it has made just over £8,000 to date.
Christ.
This is the film that stars Gillian Anderson and Ben Kingsley.
Good lord.
Look it up. It's like a fairly lo-fi aesthetic. Basically, it looks like it costs peanuts.
Yeah, that is made peanuts, so there we go.
Yeah.
So, anywho, we'll move on to the top 10.
Yay.
Jay's enthusiasm there, strong as ever.
Yay.
No, go on, do that loud, right?
No,
you.
No.
I dare you.
You don't give enthusiasm. Go for it,
man. I noticed.
That would, why not? I mean, you should be enthusiastic.
I am enthusiastic on the inside now.
Yeah. At 7, at 10, a film not to be enthusiastic at all, it's Seven Son. Somehow, despite a 74% drop and making just over 10 grand,
it's still in
the charts.
This is not necessarily a good week to be a new release.
No.
Or indeed anything that wasn't number one.
Pretty much. Oh, no, number two did well.
But the trailer for Seven Son, yeah, no.
Yeah,
that's all you'll ever see.
Yeah, I've seen more than enough.
I'm seriously surprised to see it still in the charts. 40 locations, though, so it made €236 per location, which is
abysmal.
Indeed. We shall not see its like again next
time. Hopefully.
At 9.
A very pleasant surprise.
Philip, watch it. It's Blade Runner, The Final Cut.
Yeah, it's been okay.
How many times have we seen re-releases come along and we say, get that in the top 10. Do it.
Yeah.
It's finally happened,
Jay. Yeah.
Look at that.
Yep, eight locations. So it made just under €2,000 per location.
But then again, if this was any other week, it wouldn't be here. It's only...
€14,000 is all it made, so it's not usually 20 is the third entry to the top 10.
Oh, there you go.
Then at 8, and straight back out again. Noah Baumbach's While We're Young.
I thought that might have done a little better, but again, the week it was come out.
So Jason's a huge fan of Noah Baumbach.
I am. Well, I was until his last two films. I'm more positive on Green Book than you'd be.
Yeah, I'm more positive on While We're Young than you. So fair enough. Balance.
No one the way.
Oh, love it.
Squid the Whale. Wasn't Noah the Whale's a band, is it?
Yes.
Something of the Whale. Squid the Whale, yeah, it's fantastic. Still the best film, is it?
Yeah.
Get better. And he's done a lot of good stuff with Wes Anderson back in the day as well.
It's just his life.
At 7, the Divergent series, Insurgent.
Yeah.
This is going to be here in at least another week, isn't it? It's a clinger.
55% drop.
Yeah.
Doubtful. It's
something we can not talk about again next week.
Hooray, let's move on.
At 6, The Water Diviner, straight in at 6.
It's done less than Diviner business.
No. Yeah, but it's
kind of
it's dealing with war and loss, and not necessarily the easiest of films to watch.
It's true. So.
It made just under 60,000 euros. So.
Yeah, it's okay.
It made it respectable. It was the second highest new entry. So.
Yeah, in a thin week, but yeah, there I guess.
And then at 5, Get Hard.
Fnar. Yeah,
it's Get Hard in the like become a hard man. You know?
Yeah, but it's but it's very knowing on what it's about. Yeah, this is
awful.
Yeah, we don't care about this.
Its title is a dick joke. What do you want from us? Good God,
we're get better hard, than this.
Get lost.
Stop trying to make Kevin Hart a thing.
Yeah.
At 4, SpongeBob.
SpongeBob.
I keep telling you, working with Squidward.
Yeah, I'll get on
it. 42% drop.
Scared me.
Still 112,000.
Yeah, still okay. Animation.
Yeah, but other animations have done better. Well, yeah. I'll see in a minute. But I still think this is
Stoners tend not to come out, you know.
Yeah. Which means it'll do bumper business on downloads, DVD, and whatever else.
Oh, yeah. At 3, animation, it's Home.
It's where I wanna be, pick me up. I'm sorry.
It's 1.2 million overall, not bad at all.
Led to a very interesting column on The Dissolve, in which they talk about DreamWorks not having an identity and it being to the detriment of DreamWorks, that they were kind of taken aback that this did as well as it did.
So. Yeah, interesting. Yeah,
it looks so bland and forgettable.
It does look fairly generic.
Like, Pixar kind of had the corner on more well they've been perceived as kind of more family friendly and warm studio, whereas DreamWorks were always more about the slightly edgier
pop culture reference yeah.
loaded
stars stuff. As voices
and have they lost that, because that's not a lot even to lose.
No,
see, the problem is How to Train Your Dragon 2 didn't do as well as they expected,
and this has kind of made up
this,
for that.
This has, yeah, but
interesting.
It's,
but then again, isn't that just saying that audiences are fickle?
Well, yeah, they're all very.
Who'd have thought?
Yeah.
Act 2, Cinderella, down from the top spot, Cinderella, but closing in on the million, probably has passed a million at this point.
It's not bad. Good business.
Yes. Well done, Arken.
It's not going to do Maleficent type money, but
jeez, that's the almost silly money territory, didn't it?
Oh, did yeah.
And I still don't know how.
I tried watching it. I think the first half hour and it's so much CGI. I couldn't make it past it.
There's yeah, but now it's the success of the successive films has spawned the rest of them to start.
Oh, they all come.
They're all Pinocchio, Winnie the Pooh,
Pete's Dragon.
No.
Yeah.
They're doing a live action Pete's Dragon.
They are.
Okay, forget SpongeBob. That is going to be the strongest film of choice, believe you me.
They are doing a live action. They're doing a. And also, they are getting the director of Listen Up Philip to do Winnie the Pooh.
Words fail me.
For once.
We know whatever we think of while we're young, a special place reserved in hell for Listen Up Philip.
It's, yeah.
Oh dear.
Pete's Dragon remake is.
Tell me more about the Pete's Dragon remake. Yeah, I want to hear
Pete's
this.
Pete's Dragon remake is David Lowery.
Oh, ain't the Buddy Saints?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Starring Bryce Dallas Howard.
Oh no.
Wes Bentley.
Oh no.
And Carl Urban.
Oh, okay. That's
Robert Redford.
Huh?
Yeah.
As the dragon.
Oh, as Grace's father. Craig Hall plays adult Pete. Yeah.
This sounds odd.
Very. I mean, Winnie the Pooh has the potential to be disaster, but this looks bizarrely interesting. Yeah.
I don't want to see it.
It does have that kind of train wreck type feel to it.
It does.
Carl Urban was a late replacement for Michael C. Hall.
But I'd say it's an upgrade.
Yeah, so.
Oh, my God, Carl Urban.
Ah, I like Michael Cian also.
But I prefer Carl Urban. I mean, he was great in Dread.
Yeah.
He gave good, like the man gave good chin.
He did, he did fine chin.
Good chin, indeed. So, yeah, Pete's Dragon, yeah, Mulan and Duds. I don't know, it's just crazy. I'm trying to bring up what Disney is doing now, because it's just...
It's okay. I don't want to be angry.
You bring that up, I might bring up my lunch.
Oh, yeah, I'll come back to it. And straight in at number one, with zooming up to pole position, yes, it is Fast and Furious 7.
One more dad joke like that, and we're done.
Yeah. So, it made $750,000 in, but it made... close to 1.3, or you know, so far. So it is
a behemoth.
I've nothing to say. I mean, I haven't seen them, so you know.
Made €11,000 per location, so that's
pretty good.
Way to trade on the legacy of a dead man. Well done, everybody.
That's not only about Paul Walker, but I mean, the film is very much a tribute to Paul Walker.
Yeah, I heard of some.
The ending is particularly cringy.
It is. He drives off into the sunset, and there's a montage. Yeah.
Oh my god!
But, yeah. What do you mean? Okay, in the film,
the Paul Walker character and the Vin Diesel character.
Spoiler alert!
Everyone's seen it at this point.
I haven't. You can't make me.
So the two cars pull up side by side, and Vin Diesel and Paul Walker pretend to race one another, like one final time type of thing, and then the roads part and Paul Walker drives off into the sunset while Vin Diesel's car goes off into the
ground. Gee, the look of disbelief on your face.
This is in the film.
This is
not a post credits sequence.
No, this is in the film.
This is the problem I read about. In the film, how did he know
all of the other characters except for the girl who plays his wife, Sherry Appleby, right, they're standing on the beach. Paul Walker and Sherry Appleby are playing with their child further out in the sand, and all the rest of them are up on the beach watching them play while simultaneously saying goodbye to him.
What? While he's still in frame. Fuck people on. That sounds dreadful.
Well, I mean, what do you expect for a film that, you know, it just substitutes epithets about family and instead of for, you know, proper emotion?
All throughout, they're signposting, like, something that else, right? So it's like, I don't want to have to attend another funeral. Like, I don't want to have to attend another funeral.
God, I'm not seeing this ever.
It's signposted throughout. But it's got spectacular action. It's got all of that
CG heavy action.
That's the thing, yeah. It's got all of that fun stuff that if you're into these type of films, you will enjoy.
Yeah.
If you're not, if you're like
me,
a grouch,
I enjoyed the last one, I won't lie.
But that's the only one you've seen.
Yes, but I'm open to giving some of the others a chance.
Fast Five, by far and away the best one. This one isn't a patch on 5 and 8. It's not as good as 6 either. The problem being is that it's very difficult to do this type of film when one of your main actors dies halfway through. So they CGI composited his face onto his two brothers who are body doubles in it. And
I think we're getting into dodgy territory.
I would have thought so.
They got Weta to do the digital effects.
Oh, can I just stop talking about this? It's upsetting me for some reason. I don't like it.
Not in the right way.
This is the kind of thing that sounds like, you know, you just do away with actors and, you know, CGI or somebody's face on the sun. It's like, oh, this is Star Wars all over again.
Don't give Robert Zemeckis any ideas.
Oh, stop. I don't want to talk about this anymore.
But the Irish premiere is on April Fool's Night, right? So the night of April 1st.
Oh, well, we're all hoping. But wait a minute, folks. He's not really dead.
This is very good. I read it.
Yeah. Mike Sheridan was introducing us, right? And told everyone to wait around for the post-credit sequence, which was visit Dubai in big letters. Our visit Abu Dhabi. That was it. That was the idea. There was no post-credit sequence.
There's your April Fool's.
He pumped everybody.
I'm not finding this funny.
I found that funny.
No.
It was less funny if you were there waiting around for it.
I would imagine.
Yeah.
So.
That's kind of douchey.
I like it.
When I say kind of, I mean really. When I say really, I mean absurdly.
Anyway.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about this anymore.
Fast and Furious 7 has made a whopping, 400 million worldwide.
Yeah, people are crazy.
147 million in its opening weekend in the States, which is the biggest opening in April ever, right? The previous holder of the title was last year. It was Captain America the Winter Soldier, which had 98 million.
So, whoa!
Yeah, they blew it out of the water.
Good lord.
Yeah, so. This is tracking for the $1 billion.
Wow, so there was Captain America running along, and suddenly along comes Vin Diesel on your left.
I have a question, right? Would they be not tempted for, because I'm presuming there's going to be number 8.
There is, the other guy said New York.
Would they be not tempted to just bring back CGI? I mean, surely they could. I mean,
no, they're not doing that now, though.
He's more respect.
CGI Audrey Hepburn is going to be in there instead.
Oh, stop. I don't care anymore. It's just taking away this horror franchise.
Which you haven't seen any of.
Yeah, it just sounds disgusting. And I don't care about it anymore. My Christmas watch of all the movies has been abandoned.
Why?
Yeah,
I think you should.
Yeah.
So, on to what's out this week.
Disappointed now. Now look at what's happened.
We'll see what happens. I might have forgotten this by then.
I hope so.
So already,
can we see the disgust on your face come New Year's?
Sorry, God.
Already out this week is The Duff. So The Duff came out on Monday.
I've never heard of it.
Doof.
What is the
from
Duff?
Sweden?
Designated.
Wait a minute. This is Duff. Designated ugly
fat friend. Yes. So
if you either are one, you know one, or you have one.
That's the pitch, isn't it?
That is the poster.
Yeah, okay.
So,
it's a Mean Girls type.
Except, which obviously not as good as Mean Girls.
Which Mae Whitman, best known as Her, plays the phenomenal Duff.
I like her.
And so,
who?
Plain as the N in your face.
Plain as the N on Nose's face. Or Nose as the N on Plain's face. That was one of the best running gags in the development, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
Well, it's getting positive reviews all around.
Her?
Good, I guess.
No, it's obviously not going to be. I rewatched Easy A recently, and it's not going to be that sort of level or Mean Girls level, but still, you know, it's meant to be able to hold itself in that conversation without disgracing itself. So
Okay then.
Yeah.
We can go with that.
I may watch it at some point, but it's not highly to watch this. No, it's just, you know, I have a long list of other things to do, and I'm going to become a dad very soon, so I may not have
what?
The world's most
priorities, man.
Yes. So then, there's a documentary about Kurt Cobain. How's Cobain montage of heck?
Haven't we had a few of these though? Why do we know it?
Is this the one that's produced by his daughter?
Yeah.
But this is the official version.
This is pretty much it, the official sort of.
Yeah, because Nick Warfield just doesn't get close enough to the action, does he?
No.
But I mean, the story of Kurt Cobain is interesting.
If overtold, doesn't everybody know about him?
I know. I feel like whenever I hear about Kurt Cobain, I hear somebody say, oh, another documentary about his life. I just, again, another frequent reference about mine, that Dennis Leary show where he talks about the film of The Doors. You don't need a 2.5-hour film about The Doors. Here, I'll sum it up for you in 5 seconds. I'm drunk, I'm nobody, I'm drunk, I'm famous, I'm drunk, I'm fucking dead. There, that's the film.
Yeah.
Yeah, with Val Kilmer.
Val Kilmer's great in that film.
Yeah.
Anyway, my point is, I think we have enough Kurt Cobain films, but if this one has anything different or interesting to offer, please let me know.
Well, I mean, it's getting very positive reviews.
These things tend to.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm interested in it. I will probably check this out before I'll check The Duff out. You know?
Well, if you want, I'll go along to cinema and I'll sit there. Here I am now. Entertain me.
Oh, good Christ. Don't.
Try not to say that in the cinema.
Yeah, I
promise nothing.
Yeah.
Then, Force Majeure, Jason.
Yes, Force Majeure.
Now, this one definitely
this
has got good
is
reviews.
Interesting. Directed by Ruben
Östlund.
This is a Norwegian film, by the way. I think that's right. I've got to go with that. This is a fascinating film, which begins and with
Swedish,
is it? Yes. Swedish, Norwegian, so
hello to all our Swedish and Norwegian fans. We love you.
They're indistinguishable countries.
Stephen Fry calls him Scandi-Wegian.
There you go. It's good enough for me. It's good enough for Stephen Fry. Ah, look at Sweden. Took the money all the way down there.
I bet you did.
He would. Basically, yeah, the setup of the film is...
Sweden, France and Norway.
I love stuff. The family go on a kind of skiing winter holiday in somewhere. And they,
The French Alps.
The mountains.
He's seen the film, which
I have seen the film. The basic kind of setup starts kind of where they go out, they sit on this terrace for a meal, and they're kind of sitting at a table, and there's a few people around, and there's a loud bang, which you presume is some kind of avalanche type deal, and you see it's kind of snowing in the mountain, and everybody kind of looks, and there's the kind of nervous laughter, people stand up, start taking photographs, because, you know, it's a way, it's a decent bit of way, but then it kind of comes closer and closer. And everybody starts to panic. As the kind of drift comes across and comes across the camera, what you see is not 100% clear, but what you can kind of make out is the husband grabs his phone and runs away from the terrace while his wife powers under the table with the children, his two children. And what comes out then is that it was basically a controlled demolition thing to bring snow down in the mountain, and this was just mist that came across. It's not actual kind of snow. So everybody returns, kind of nervous laughter again. Everybody sits down, the husband sits down, the family sits down. Nothing is the same from here on in, because basically what you get after this then is an interrogation of masculinity and the role a father plays in his family's kind of life and how they see him and how he sees up, how he constructs himself. Very funny in moments. There's a great scene where a couple of friends are there as well. And they go for dinner with them, and then they kind of rack around for drinks. And they essentially become a kind of a jury on the couple's relationship, because the wife can't let it go. She just can't let it go, because he won't admit that he did it, that he ran off, he took his phone. And it gets into this kind of thing whereby people are relationships, because there's something wrong here anyway. I think by the time the film kind of comes around towards climax, you feel that there's something already amiss before even this happened, but it takes this to expose it. And it gets a little bit darker towards the end. It's powerful enough. It's icy, you know, sort of the setup and the location. Yeah. But it is dark. It does touch a Haneke.
I'm intrigued.
It sags a little bit in the middle, but not much. And then it builds towards a kind of fairly impressive final scene, which leaves things quite open.
Ooh.
And in an odd kind of way.
And that is Haneke.
And, yeah, and... it's not perfect, but there's a hell of a lot of good stuff in it. And it's a really interesting idea.
I really need to check this out.
Yeah, I think you'd really like it. You should definitely check it out. I would heartily recommend it. Mm.
Then, one that you would not recommend, although I don't think it's quite as bad as you guys do, it's Good Kill.
Jay said a lot, so let me just get this
rolling.
Good Kill. Good God. We talked about this last week when we were summing up JDiff. This is really not good. I mean, it's...
Or Kill.
No, it kills. It's killed my patience.
I think the problem is...
There are many problems.
Yeah, there are. But so, the potential for...
Yeah, that's the first problem. It's wasted potential. Considering the people involved, it's directed by Andrew Niccol, the director of Gattaca, Lord of War, writer of The Truman Show.
Fine
CV.
Yeah,
good cast. Ethan Hawke is the lead. Bruce Greenwood, January Jones, Zoe Kravitz. Fine line.
Yeah, very decent. And the idea is good.
The basic plot sees Ethan Hawke as a former pilot. Well, he's still in the Air Force, but he's no longer
a pilot.
He's instead piloting drones over Afghanistan and Iraq. And
from base.
From a trailer, basically. And on a base outside Las Vegas, and so while he's still fighting the war, he's able to go home to his wife and children afterwards. So basically, he's clocking in and out of the war rather than being permanently a member there. And so the story is trying to tell what it's like to be at war yet still be in a domestic situation, which is an interesting.
No, it's a very interesting idea.
You're bringing some kind of shell home with you.
Yeah, and even though it's supposed to be perfect, because, you know, you have the family home, but there is problem. But how it chooses to represent those problems and those issues, it's clumsy,
cliche.
It's cliched, and it's lumpen with exposition.
And because of that, it ends up being quite dull.
Extraordinarily so, and you can almost telegraph scenes that are that obvious.
I mean, there's ways to use signposting in literature, in film, whatever. This is thunderingly obvious.
Yeah, this is the way not to use it in
it
any way.
It does wear its politics very much on its sleeve. It
war is bad.
Okay,
not
going to go to war.
It's
not just that war is bad. It's that this remote killing is, you know, is all it's doing is promoting the next generation
of
terrorists.
But they don't show that. Well, they do show that. But then they proceed to tell you and lecture you and stand on a soapbox and tell you again just in case you didn't get it.
Critic, it might have been David Ehrlich, I can't recall, but they said, whenever one of the drones achieves a hit, they say, good kill. And then it's as if Nickel stands there behind that character's shoulder saying, but was it really, really a good kill? Was it good?
I mean, I'd like to think there seems to be like factual problems with this one. Like, there's these characters who sly aside to their senior commanders and kind of, you know, in almost open kind of, you know, we shouldn't be doing it, like, well, in the middle of operations, which I'm sure wouldn't be tolerated or allowed, considering you're about to kill people.
Yeah, but then again, you're presuming that these could actually be real people. You have Zoe Kravitz as this rookie woman who's just joined up and, oh, she doesn't know what she's in for. I bet she has scenes where she sheds a single tear at the atrocities she's about to commit. And what do you know? She does.
Then you've got two right-wing guys who kind of promote the whole, you know, well, they're coming to us, so we have to get them first, kind of the usual kind of nonsense you get.
Yeah, the counterpoint. Subtle as a brick.
And all that's fine if that's all, if you're kind of doing this liberal telling of a story where a drone's a bad, blah, 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 fine. It's dull, but fine. But then, at the end, it proceeds to have its cake and eat it because...
It does something where it almost justifies itself.
Yeah, and it goes, you know, it's really bad, but if you do this, it's fine. It's like, no, it fucking well isn't.
If they'd done one thing different with that scene, it could have actually improved the whole film.
I found the whole thing nauseating and absolutely appalling, quite frankly. I found it dreadful.
It is quite poor on so many levels. Morally, from a filmmaking point of view.
Yeah.
Very
script
bad.
Level point of view.
The character is given nothing.
Hawk is great, just not as...
There are so many aerial shots in it.
Yeah, but that...
Well, you'd expect that for a film about drones,
wouldn't you? I'm just saying, it's not all terrible.
It pretty much is.
Ethan Hawke is a fine
waster, absolutely waster.
But yeah, because here he's playing a grunt essentially who doesn't say a lot. I'm sorry, but have you watched the Before trilogy? The man can talk.
Yeah.
Don't give him that role.
Oh, it's horrible.
We move on to something better.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
John Wick.
Ah.
Yeah.
Someone might disagree on this,
I don't dislike it.
Hang on, let's just start off. Talk about John Wick. John Wick, yes, Keanu. He's back kicking ass yet again as a guy with a poncho for a black wardrobe. Basically, he plays John Wick, a former assassin.
Yeah, the less you know about him, the better.
Yeah, well, we'll just talk about how it
opens.
Basically, it opens, he plays a former assassin who is in mourning, having just lost his wife. And
this never happened to the film before, I've never seen that scene.
And it opens with that.
Yeah,
that's pretty much
all of it.
His wife has given him one last gift, so he has
a
brand new puppy.
So that he doesn't lose the ability to care about something.
So,
It's done, we know. It knows.
He decides to go for a drive, and he meets Yosef, who is a
Russian
mob boss's son. Mm. And the mob boss's son takes a shine to his car, follows him home, takes the car, kills the dog,
and beats the shit out of John.
Yes, but crucially, leaves him alive. Right. So at which point, then John Wick decides to go on a mission of vengeance. And what a mission of vengeance
it is!
The body count.
It's preposterous.
Of course, it's preposterous. All these things are, every film like this is proposed.
But there's this lovely sort of stylized secondary route going on where he goes to this hotel in the city and it's full of all these other people who live in the same seedy world, they all live by a code of conduct.
Yeah.
And it's, Ian McShane owns the hotel.
It starts off as something very rogue, and to a large extent it is. I think it is just a very well done revenge thriller. I mean, it's slick and it's well put together.
Yeah, I agree.
But what I think gives a little extra something is what you're talking about. There's this extra layer.
It's a lived-in world, you know. It's a
yeah. Now it doesn't necessarily make any much sense. It's quite silly at times. But then again, as I say, a lot of these films are. But you get into it. It has some neat little side characters.
It's because it's got defined rules, understandable rules, and that helps, you know.
And it helps that you've got a good cast along for the ride. You've got Ian McShane, Willem Dafoe, Michael Nyquist, who is probably best known for the original Girl with the Dragon Tattoo trilogy.
Yeah.
He's hilarious in this. He's the villain,
the mob boss.
Yeah.
And he just steals every scene he's in. He's just brilliant. At one point, he's having a phone conversation-ish with Wick, and he just says one word, and the entire cinema collapses with the guffaws. It's a hoot. It's an unsubtle hoot, an imperfect hoot. It drags after a while.
It's only 90 minutes long.
I felt longer.
It feels longer. It does.
That's to its detriment, I think.
The last act is a bit. It does start to wobble, but for the most part, it loses
all plausibility. I mean, you're willing to go along with this idea that your man's on a vengeance mission, but that when the gangster does the world's most boneheaded thing, and you know, after cutting a deal with him, decides to do something so that he's still back on his trail.
It's silly. Again, there's only so much that you can forgive. But I would say, again, for the most part, it's a heck of a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And
Willem Dafoe.
Yeah.
And this one, I can't disagree with pretty much all either of you said. Like, there's not much that I would add in that regard. With the exception of, by the time the last kind of half an hour, 40 minutes going on, I was pummeled senseless by it. I was exhausted by it.
Mm.
And the fun started to drain out of it.
Yeah.
And I think I'm fine with people, like, I think Phil, where you're coming from and the kind of the level you're kind of pitching out, it's actually fine. But it's the reviews beyond that baffle me.
There have been a few, which seems a little bizarre to me.
Like, and it's kind of, it seems to be only for various things, like Keanu's back. It's a bit old school. It's kind of.
Well, it is good to have Keanu back, definitely.
No, Reeves is great. I mean, he does that kind of stuff really, really well.
I'll come back to that at this point, actually. But yeah, go on.
And just, I'm fine. Like it by all means, and go see it by all means. It is good fun.
Yeah.
But it's no more than that.
I think it is.
I think initially it is, and then it's not, and then it becomes less and less and exhausting. But I think initially it's there. I will agree.
I agree with the point that it is a bit too long, and even then it's not a very long film, as these things go. What I like about it a bit more than you is, it does. Okay, so it's a very polished product as these things go. But the fact that it does so many kind of, it has these silly little elements, like the puppy. That the fact that it opens with that kind of silly gambit and you're willing to go along with it, it pitches the film at a certain kind of nonsensical pitch that, this is what you're going to give us, let's go with that.
It's hyper-reality.
It is. And considering how many people Keanu Reeves actually shoots in the head in this thing, I cannot keep count.
I know.
Like,
it's easier in the thousands. It's just never ending. It's absolutely never ending.
Headshots, the movie. Yeah.
I get bored by that kind of thing. Like, there's only so much relentlessness to it.
It does have a video game leveling up type.
Oh, of course it does.
It definitely does.
Yeah. And a payback type thing. Remember payback? And the various guises. Point
did Braveheart
like
run
that.
Away? Did Payback run away? No.
Thank you, Homer. But no, I agree with you that it does drag, but I think it's more down to the more scripting decisions in that it could have ended and just keeps going a bit rather than me being just exhausted. I enjoyed it. But I'm just, if it ended,
not far apart then, actually, I don't think, relatively speaking. I think you're probably about a half a star.
We're about a mile. Okay, maybe.
What did you give it out of 5?
Oh, do we have to do this?
I'm just asking.
I give it a 3.5 out of 5.
Okay, only a point apart.
Okay.
So
that was very civil for us, isn't it?
From, rather,
indeed,
quite.
Well, yes,
from the mindless and fun that is the and bloody awfulness and bloody brilliance that is John Wick, because it is. It is.
It's daft.
Daft.
But good fun.
Yeah. We move on to two sequels that nobody asked for. First, Hot Tub Time Machine 2.
I
didn't mind the first one, but I don't see the point.
I didn't see the first one, but I mean, it looks so painfully stupid.
It's kind of awful.
But why do these things keep roping in people I like? Rob Corddry, John Cusack,
that was the first
Craig
one.
Robinson.
This one doesn't have all of them.
Cusack's not back, is
yeah,
it?
Yeah, no.
Which
Cusack's says, made a bad few decisions in the last couple of years. There's been a lot of... He's turned into the Cage. He's made a lot
he's
of bad
moves. He's with the Cage.
There you go.
But he skipped this. Might be a good decision for a change.
Yeah.
The other is Paul Blart's Mall Cop 2.
Again. Now, the first one I didn't see because Kevin James is in it, who I have an aversion for. That I can't even... I could spend a half an hour talking about how much I hate him. But
I don't know anybody who doesn't have an aversion to Kevin
James. His
how
movies
does he keep
money?
Getting these films?
I do not know.
Sue Murphy was in a taxi with a taxi driver the other day, and he likes Kevin James, so...
Somebody, did he get his reg in reporting? Straight to the taxi company. He liked
I'm Kevin sorry, James. The boy of yours likes Kevin James.
No,
please don't his accent.
He likes him. Yeah, I don't know. I don't get it. I don't know.
No. It's madness. Absolute madness.
Then, onto something a bit more sedate, but good, according to Philip. Ha-ha.
Oh, fine. I've talked about this so much before. I'm glad it's finally here. But here goes. Yes, Ha-ha. Strange film, this, considering the ones we've just talked about. This and John Wick in the same week.
Here's a double bill, eh?
Maybe in a strange way. Let me think about that.
If you were just watching movies that came out this week that begin with J.
There you go. There's a rather specific set for yourself.
Intersection of...
But, well, actually, funny enough, like you were saying about John Wick, and I can't believe we're drawing these comparisons, but probably the less you know about this, the better.
Okay.
It's a very thoughtful and very specific tone piece. The basic story is it's set in Argentina, 1882. Stay with me.
Patagonia,
so in Argentina, yeah. Or rather, Argentina is expanding into Patagonia. Yeah. There's a war campaign, but you don't see too much of that. The story is a Danish army captain, played by Viggo Mortensen, arrives there to advise the army on their strategy and so forth. And he arrives there with his young daughter, about teenage daughter. And anyway, while they're just... He's there trying to take it all in and, of course, contemplating going back to Denmark and all this. And she gets acquainted with a young Argentinian... he's a young guy helping out with the army, and they run off. So after that setup, the rest of the film is just it's concerned with Mortensen's character going off to find her, and instead of that, what he finds is something along the lines of a Samuel Beckett play, basically.
Okay. Oh, that's enough. I don't want any more information.
He actually finds God up.
Yeah, well.
He's out there.
Kind of. But basically, he starts off on the hunt, and you think, okay, this is going somewhere along a narrative you think might follow the searchers,
yeah.
But then it kind of gets more offbeat, and then even more offbeat, and then he goes down a rabbit hole, which you're not sure, okay, I have no idea where this is going, but I'm going to stay with it. And then it comes to an ending, which is either you're going to go, oh, okay, right. Or you're going to think, no, this is bull.
Which way? I presume you went the
I liked
you went
it.
With it.
I liked it, but I know people won't. Some people
would won't. I like it?
this, I don't know, Jay. I genuinely
do. I want to see this now. You have me intrigued.
It's perfectly square. It's 1-1.
That was Mommy. This
that
is
was Mommy.
Also,
it's
but this
four,
is another one of those experiments. It's
four,
shot in 4-3.
Yeah, it's 4-3. Yeah.
And actually, as I learned when I talked with Mr. Mortensen in my interview.
Plug.
It's on the website. It wasn't actually shot that way. It was a mistake in the lab afterwards. And the director figured, considering that when it's set, yeah, let's use that. And he did.
Yeah, because...
The director, by the way, is Argentinian director Lisandro Alonso. And, God, if I need to watch more of his stuff, but if it's anywhere near as hypnotic as this, I'm in.
I have a kind of question. Mortensen, is he... Like, we were talking about kind of actors that if you see on a kind of DVD cover, you go, ugh. You know, there's certain
really?
Actors... No, not Mortensen, no. There's certain actors that... Like, there's such, you know, Nick Cage kind of, Mortensen almost seems to be the opposite. If he's in something, you're like, I'm always, because it's always going to be something in it, because he looks for something in it. Yeah.
Yeah.
He looks for something a little deeper than your average,
yeah,
as a general
thing.
Because
the thing about Mortensen is, like, he was a jawing kind of character actor for many, many years.
Yeah.
Then he got his part in Lord of the Rings. And that made him a star. And he's just not about the star game at all, considering the films he's made since. The biggest things he's been in since are a pair of David Cronenberg.
Yeah,
Eastern Promises
and...
Eastern Promises, History of Violence,
and
Dangerous Method.
Yeah.
And he almost consistently goes for more interesting left-field material. And
directors.
That's what I like about him. And interesting directors.
That's why I'm fascinated. I just want to see him like that. He's always in something that's... a little offbeat, a little kind of, and it could be anywhere in the world. Like, I mean, there's no kind
of. But the thing is, this is actually really strange. This is the first time that Mortensen, a man with Danish roots, actually plays a Dane, speaking Danish.
Yeah.
And what's more, he's playing him in a country where he grew up. It is Taylor's
name. It's a
Busman's
holiday, isn't it?
It is. And it's no coincidence he's really good.
I'm going to try catch this. This sounds like something, like, even if I hate, I'll be happy to have seen, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
I'm definitely going to catch this. This will be a convincing film.
Good. Glad to hear it. If one person goes to see it because of me, I'm happy.
Oh, by God, if I hate it, you'll hear about it next week.
Oh, don't mind.
The way that the guys feel about Good Kill is the way that I feel about the next movie. It's Ryan Gosling's Lost River.
Oh boy, this one's been rolling down for a while.
I want to hear Niall's take on this.
Lost River is appalling. It is a mess of visuals. It is a mess. It confuses style for substance. Very much so. It wastes brilliant talent in Christina Hendricks and Saoirse Ronan. And Ben Mendelsohn. I mean, seriously. Yeah.
It's a fine cast.
It's awful.
You sound like you're about to choke on your
ears. Parallel levels of awful is what it is.
Oh, no, they're parallel.
I haven't seen this.
How you feel about Only God Forgives is how I feel about Lost River.
We've reached a new low.
It is appalling. Utter tripe. The moment that they turn up at the new place of work for Christina Hendricks' character and you see the image of it, and it's on the poster, you're just like, yeah, I'm out.
Yeah, it's a doorway that sculpts like a mouth.
Yeah. Oh, I've seen it before,
No. But the basic... See, the problem is, I'm just going to talk about what the plot is, but this is where the problem is. The script just is nowhere near... Well, it should be nowhere near a screen, basically.
He wrote it.
He did.
All he's doing is taking pieces from films that he's been in or seen that have influenced him in some way. So you've got Lynch and Winding Refn in there, and this.
Yeah.
It's just.
Basically, the basic story is Christina Hendricks is. She owns. You know, she's living in rather decrepit American suburbia.
Yeah,
it's. And she's fallen behind on her mortgage.
Suburb of Detroit.
Yeah. And like, it really plays up that fact. The opening credits. Show a load of abandoned and crumbling houses, and I just think, I'm sorry, am I watching Ryan Gosling's Lost River, or is this Gummo? Thank you, I don't need that. I don't
Michael
need any Harmony Korine here.
Or Mike Moore.
Or Michael Moore.
Yeah.
Harmony Korine meets Michael Moore. I want to see that. So, but at the suggestion of her banker, played by Mendelsohn.
Yeah,
she gets a
banker.
He's a half-deaf mortgage advisor.
Of
course, he
and
also
a lech of the highest order.
Yeah, that's more.
And he also he offers her a job at his club.
Yeah, which is a giallo bloody club. It's
basically people watch people get killed and things like that. Or allegedly.
Yeah,
pretty much. Mendelsohn is having a ball playing a version of Dennis Hopper in Blue Velvet.
Very much so.
Yeah. There's a scene near the end. I mean, I don't like him much more than you.
The very last, 10 minutes of it, which I described to Philip in a text message.
I had three very early.
Yeah, is... It just sums up just what sort of utter nonsense this
is. Just before I had to leave, is what has to be one of the most memorable scenes of the year, which features Ben Mendelsohn dancing.
Yes.
He is a good dancer.
He is a scary dancer.
It's absolutely terrifying. I never thought I'd say this, but Ben Mendelsohn dancing is the scariest thing I would see in a film this year.
Even scarier than Steve Carell jogging in Foxcatcher?
Yes.
Good lord.
But, not as a counterpoint necessarily, but having said, I saw it as well, and at the same screening, I don't dislike it as much as you, but that does not say it's good. I think, it's like the cinematography in Only God Forgives, I don't think it's serving anything particularly worthy, but it's bright and it's pretty. It's Benoit Deby is the director of photography. No coincidence, he was also the DOP on Spring Breakers.
Yes.
It's fine working that, actually,
yeah.
I'm not a big fan of that film, but this...
No, me either, but it's similarly pitched, similar look. So it's a good-looking film, but it... Who cares?
I've read today 2 4-star reviews of this from people. Admittedly, on Letterboxd,
I'm going to show you a 4-star review of Good Kill soon. So.
Yeah, you see, this is it. This is the thing. I'd like,
but Jay, who'd have thought opinions are subjective?
I am aware of
like
that.
Assholes.
But everybody has one.
But the general consensus on
Lost River is
that even the most generous kind of reviews of it will admit there's problems here.
Well, you'd have to.
Do you know? That's exactly
what you think of the film. You'd have to, because at the end of the day, it is a debut. But even with that in mind, there's
Look
just...
Simple was a debut.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, I mean, that's no excuse.
Yeah, well, except
Jewel.
Debuts are...
But
debuts,
even by the standard debuts, though, this is just... No, it's tosh.
I fucking called it years ago on Gosling, but anyway.
No, it's he was allowed to make a film that he should never have been allowed to make.
Yeah.
And that's the problem.
But
I
think there's some... I'd like to see him try something with a script he didn't write.
Interesting.
A good script.
But what, see, you're told, then you're getting into a script he would pick... As opposed, you know, which
all
might
right,
be
then,
of the same.
Get, okay, let's see. Let's get some. I know what. Let's get Andrew Niccol to write a script, a good script. Throw it in Gosling's hands. Put a gun to his hand and say, "Film this."
I don't think I want to see that though.
Ah, no, I'd like to see it just to see what he'd do under pressure with a gun to his head.
And the last new release of the week, Woman in Gold.
I bet it's nowhere near as scary as A Woman in Black.
I wouldn't imagine.
Or as sexy as The Woman in Red.
Or
Jessica Rabbit or Christopher Bard?
That's Lady
Red.
Still, somebody's red. Is
Kelly LeBrock, actually, from back in the 80s. Jane Wilder.
There you go, now. But this is Helen Mirren. It's a different type of sexy.
But still sexy.
Very much so. Her on Helium is quite something.
That was genius.
Thank you, Jimmy Fallon. And I'll never thank him for anything again.
That was very, very funny.
Oh, she's quite something.
So this is Ryan Reynolds. So therefore, that's Daniel Brühl, Katie Holmes, Tatiana Maslany, Max Irons, Elizabeth McGovern, Jonathan Pryce.
That's a pretty good cast.
It's an interesting cast.
Yeah.
But the material sounds unchallenging.
It's another one of these ones about, you know, a Jewish woman looking to get the good stuff that was stolen from her family during the war.
Max schnell bitte Artings. Yeah, I must be back in Stuttgart in time for Kraftwerk. Thank you, Simpsons, yet again.
It sounds wordy, but yeah.
It's more of a legal challenge.
Oh, really?
To
oh.
get back to the artwork. She, her aunt had a Gustav Klimt painting, and it was stolen by the Nazis. And basically, she took her case to the Supreme Court of the United States.
Okay,
as you would for a Klimt.
Yeah. I would. A kingdom for a Klimt.
So it's getting mixed reviews. It's not based on the strength of the acting, but more based on the strength of the script.
Yeah, I mean, the cast sounds fine.
Yeah. Who's directing this?
Is it directed by Simon Curtis?
Closed Circuit, I think.
He did.
Which I believe is bloody dull.
He adapted.
Come on, Niall, you're keeping me on tenterhooks here.
Yeah, so this is his directorial debut.
Oh.
So.
Really?
Yeah.
He adapted something, though. I've heard the name before.
He's a producer. No, he's done all TV stuff. He's done loads of TV.
Okay.
It was something from TV then. But see, this is the thing. I find a lot of TV directors, when they move to film, they pick safe material like this. They're just not going to do anything.
Yeah. He's an executive producer on Indian Summer.
Oh, that's supposed to be pretty good.
I have a series recording, haven't you? You have to get to it.
Yeah.
Anyway, we move on to the special part of the podcast, which I tasked the two.
An actual podcast extra.
I enjoy you. The switch has to switch off now.
Based
we get to an argument.
But please don't.
The AV Club have their top 100 films of the decade to date, and so this inspired us to do
yeah,
like this.
Inspired is interesting that we had Francis Hannah number 4.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So basically, I tasked the guys with picking 20 films from this decade, top 20 films from this decade, in no particular order, but Jason could not do that.
I'm a numbers man.
Yeah, and I ended up picking 30, so Philip was the only one that stuck to the script.
But we can still just give 20 if we want, Niall. You don't have to give 30, we're 54 here, but
You give us your top 20, just not in any order.
Yeah. But I'm not just giving it an order.
Give it an order.
Oh, fine.
What does it make a difference to anybody?
You'd be surprised.
I'm starting at 20 and I'm finishing at 1.
Yeah, I'm going to go in alphabetical order.
Okay, right.
I'm going to go in whatever damn order I like.
Number 20, Living in a Coded Land.
Ooh.
Number 19, The Social Network.
Social Network, yes.
Number 18, The Wolf of Wall Street.
Wasn't it Knocked It Out?
Nowhere
Don't
near.
Give me that look, Philip. Number 17, Before Midnight.
Ooh.
In my...
Number 16, Oslo, August 31st.
That is Knocked It Out, isn't it?
Fantastic.
I haven't seen
it. Oh, it's glorious. Number 15, Tyrannosaur.
Ooh. Interesting pick.
Yeah, I love it. Number 14, Foxcatcher.
Didn't even consider it.
I just wasn't expecting that.
Number 13, Under the Skin.
Nice.
No, never.
I know, someone tells me you wouldn't have that. Number 12,
33. Yes.
Nice.
Yeah. Now we're into the 5 stars, really. Well, you could probably argue 5 stars, right? Number 11, Amour.
I'm missing that. Okay.
I don't like Amour, but I wouldn't put it there. No.
Number 10, Separation.
Yeah.
Number 9, Shame.
Yes, Shame's in mine.
No, how did I miss that?
Good question.
Yeah.
Do you want to take some time to revise your continue here?
No, I'm good.
Yeah, okay. Number 8, Margaret.
Yes.
Yeah. Thought we'd all have a look at that. Number 7, A Prophet.
Yes.
Mm. Number 6, Blue Jasmine.
No.
Oh, okay. I thought that might be a kind of quiet one. Number 5, The Tree of Life.
Yes. Yes, all the way.
Number 4, The Act of Killing. Number 3, Enter the Void. Number 2, The Master.
Yes.
And number 1, The Turin Horse. And 1 and 2 are interchangeable depending on my day.
You're such a happy chappy, aren't you?
Aren't I?
Yeah. Right. I was afraid that my list might be a bit mainstream, but I'm glad to see a lot of crossovers.
There we go.
Let me see.
Okay.
Or cross outs, as they recommend, you know.
Okay. My top 20. Now, this is in no particular order.
Okay.
So, feel free to argue as you will, because I know you will anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Right, I'll start with them as I have them here. The Social Network.
Yes.
No argument.
The Tree of Life.
Shane.
Yep.
Margaret. Holy Motors.
Yep.
Just missed out.
I love that song.
I don't love it as much as everybody else, but it's in the list after Beyond the Twig.
The Great Beauty.
Yes.
Ditto. It's on my list, but not so much.
Her.
Yep.
No.
Only Lovers Left Alive.
No.
No. I thought that'd be quite enough. Under the Skin.
Of course.
Of course.
Of course. Mm-hmm. So it's right beside Lost River in your circles, I have
that. It's not. I actually prefer Under the Skin.
Whoa,
good lord. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Before Midnight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Winter's Bone.
Considered it. It's in my list, but it's not until 20.
Considered it as well. Yeah.
Yeah. We Need to Talk About Kevin.
No.
No.
No?
I could briefly consider it, but no.
I love that one. The Master.
Yeah.
Zero Dark Thirty.
Yes.
No.
Okay. 12 Years a Slave.
Yeah.
Just outside my top 20.
Citizen Four.
Not that high, but I do like it.
Had it knocked it out.
Mm.
There's a little surprise negative reaction about that film. Anyway, fun.
Yeah. Bit of a backlash now.
Yeah.
I don't understand.
I don't either.
It's inevitable. Any film gets a critical consensus, it gets a backlash almost immediately. And then it'll get the revision.
Yeah.
Well, here's open. Inside Llewyn Davis.
It's in my list, but not.
Had it knocked it out as well.
Beasts of the Southern Wild.
Beasts of the Southern Wild is two places outside my
head. Yeah, I had it and knocked it out.
22.
Upstream Colour.
Number 27.
That's it. It was on my consideration list.
Yeah.
And finally, The Duke of Burgundy.
Haven't watched it.
On my list. That's a fine list. I aside from maybe We Need to Talk About Kevin and Only Lovers Left Alive, I pretty much considered all of them. And included quite a few.
Good.
Fine list.
I'll go in alphabetical order.
Go on then.
12 Years a Slave.
Yeah.
A Prophet.
Yes.
A Separation.
Yes.
Before Midnight.
Yeah.
Blue is the Warmest Colour.
It's on the list. It's on it. It's further down, but yeah.
Like it a lot, but I don't rate it quite as highly as some.
Her.
Yeah.
Holy Motors.
Oh,
yeah. Encendie.
Ooh.
Which?
Encendie.
Oh, I haven't seen it. I haven't seen it, actually. It's on my list.
Inception. Watch.
Inception is in my... It's in my... my 50 odd that I've written out. But,
that is a good pick. I
never thought it is. It's in the mix for me.
Margaret.
Yeah.
Once Upon a Time in Anatolia.
Oh, thank you very much.
Considered,
like that.
But not there.
Skyfall.
It will make my 100 anyway.
I like it a lot. About it, but it's
Take Shelter.
Oh, now that is an underrated
film. I liked it, not as much as most of
it. It absolutely killed me.
Michael Shannon is great.
Yeah.
But I think, I'm not sure if there's too much more to it than that. But anyway, it's
best performance,
I
think.
The Act of Killing.
Yeah.
The Grand Budapest Hotel.
Just outside my 20, The Grand Budapest.
The Great Beauty.
Double Eight.
Master.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Social Network.
Mm.
Touring Horse.
Yeah.
Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy.
It's in. Well, it was considered. It's in.
If I had 30
odd,
it'd be in there.
Yeah.
Toy Story 3 and
yeah.
Zero Dark 13.
Nice.
Have we
got a number one? If you were going to be naming them.
Oh man! Again, the more than yourself would change from day to day. But if I had
a couple.
All right. Let me just look through these briefly, and when I think about it, Margaret.
Nice choice. It goes higher up every time I watch it, by the way.
Yeah, same here.
Glorious thing.
I love that film.
Social Network.
You know what? Of that list, only It and The Master, I would say, are the most technically perfect films.
I agree with that. I would...
Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy is...
Glorious.
It is quite something as well.
Turing Horse just... floors me
and the cinematography of Once Upon a Time in Anatolia.
I'm not as gone on Once Upon a Time in Anatolia as some are. I do like it, but not as highly as a lot of people.
I'm the same way with the Turing Horse. But that's me.
That's us.
It is us. But you look at our list and you look at the other list, even the AV Club, and a lot of the ones we're repeating.
They're world
time and again.
End. What in the actual Christ are people on?
The ones I skipped, in case you're interested in the ones I said. I skipped to do it. Avengers.
Yeah.
Bernie.
I like Bernie. Yeah.
Bernie's not bad, but I don't think
I like that high, but I do like
it. But I like it, though.
Birdman.
Yeah.
Black Swan.
No. It's on my list as well. I like Black Swan.
Drive.
No.
The only one from this year so far. Ex Machina.
Oh.
Interesting.
I've seen.
How to Train Your Dragon.
Good choice. I really like it.
Short Term 12.
No. Wasn't a fan.
It's not bad, but I would like that.
Okay.
Yeah, there we go. Just skipped.
My one, the one that's just missed out on my top 20, Four Lines.
Ooh, nice.
That just is missed out 21. I really need to rewatch.
I was thinking about today going, I need to rewatch that again. That's awesome.
It's so bitter.
Yeah.
And it's so funny. Black comedy is hard to do.
Yeah.
A gem.
I don't know if I'll get to a top 100, and if I do, I'll post it, but if I don't, I'll do a top 15 and post it.
I wouldn't have done this list, but for your suggestion, because when I look back on these, I don't think I would be able to actually order them, because they're interchangeable. But all I know is right now, I just want to go home and rewatch Marvel.
Yeah, I only watched it a while ago. Come on, back. That's bloody great.
It really is.
I mean, it's great.
Anyway, that's our obsession with Mark.
That was good. I enjoyed that. That was good.
We will leave it there for the week.
Yes.
And we'll be back next week.
All right, bye.
Bye-bye.